Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Now, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish the book, whatever book I'm reading at the time, I do the review here and stick the review up on the podcast feed. Not a lot of news this time out. Still here on holiday. Been doing a little bit less reading recently because I managed to finish off two books in like 4 days or 5 days. So I decided to give it a bit of rest and actually work on my own novel. Novel number two, this is, Codename Monster Story. And I've finished off a good edit, I think, of that. So if anyone wants to check it out, give some initial feedback of my second novel. If you read and enjoy my first one, go for it. Just email me, luke@juggler.net, codename Monster Story, and ask to read that, and I'll send it out. It's a little bit shorter than my last novel, and if you want to know a little bit about it, it's just set with a... It's got monsters in it, and it's set on a different planet. I think that's probably all you need to know. So it's a lot different from my first book, which is more of a near future, like large cast, long, like non-linear kind of book going on. This is very linear, because I wanted to be a complete departure from my first novel. So if you didn't like the sound of my first one, or if you'd try it and didn't like it, try this one out because it might be more down your alley. Let me put it that way. Also, just check your feed or check your iTunes, because sometimes people's iTunes only download the last episode they notice rather than all the last episodes that they notice. So last time I did put out two podcasts, one me, and I stuck the Sofanauts podcast that I was on in the feed as well, as a little bonus for those who didn't check it out anyway. But you might have missed the last review that I did of Slan by A.E. Van Vogt. Anyway, let's move straight on now to this episode's book. It's called Old Man's War. So yeah, get it right there. Old Man's War by John Scalzi. And it was written in... I should have written this down this time. Published 2005. And it's around about... let me just check this out here just to get it right at the beginning. Let's say around about 315 pages long. When I finished this book, I just checked it online onto Goodreads.com, because I'm signed up to Goodreads.com. And that's really great because then, you know, it keeps track of what books I have in my shelf and what books I've reviewed and what books and that kind of stuff. And I noticed that when I finished this book, you know, I removed it from my currently reading shelf on Goodreads.com, and I realized that quite a few other people who are listeners to the SFBRP are also my friends on Goodreads, they've already read it and given it quite high ratings, generally around about, you know, 3.5, 4, 5 star ratings there. To be honest, I didn't enjoy the book quite that much, but I did enjoy it quite a bit. And I'm saying that now at the beginning because I don't really have a lot of good things to say about this book, because they're sort of tied up in the last part of the book, which I really enjoyed rather than the beginning of the book, which was a bit slow. So I can't really talk about them too much without spoiling it so much. So just forgive me if I do go a little bit too negative on this book, because overall I want the impression that I thought it was all right. You know, it wasn't too bad. So even though it sounds like I'm ramping up to a 2-star review, I think it's actually a bit of a better book than just 2 stars or 1.5 stars. When I look through my notes here, a lot of them are negative. So anyway, let's first set up now the universe of the book. It's set in some time in the future, not quite sure where. To be honest, doesn't really matter when it takes place. Just takes place in a future, and what's happened is that Earth has people have gone into space from Earth, left Earth behind, and this colony agency set up this army to defend Earth and to defend their colonies, because there's loads and loads of other aliens around the galaxy. They're just all over the place, really, and they're all fighting for territory, and they're all, you know, wanting this bit and that bit, and they're all quite vicious. So to defend against them, the colony have set up this army. And it works out that once you leave Earth, you can't come back at all. And so there's been various wars on Earth in the future. And what happens is that Indians and other people, they become colonists themselves. But Americans aren't allowed to become colonists for some reason. I'm not entirely sure why. But they can become soldiers. So that's the setup. But for some reason, of course, I understand why you're not allowed back down onto Earth once you've left Earth, for sort of contamination reasons, because there's lots of other aliens out there. So once you leave Earth, that's it. But there's this other thing, is that what happens off Earth, like in the army and in the colonies, seems to be kept a bit too much of a secret, and I can't remember why. There's lots of things in this book, which I might come back to. It's sort of like, this happened, but I can't remember why it happened, but they said it was stated anyway. Like, the reasons behind it weren't exactly clear. But for some reason, things off the Earth, you know, in the colonies are kept secret, especially what happens in the army. And, and just to throw it out there, faster than light travel is possible with something called the skip drive, which is just a, you know, a way to get people from planet to planet, system to system, in the cleanest, quickest possible way. So, the story is this. John Perry is our main character. He's our first-person narrator here. And he's 75. When the book starts, he's 75 years old. And it turns out that when you get to 75-year-old, you can join up with the colony army into the infantry there. And you can sign up when, like, 10 years previously that you can sign up, but you're not actually allowed to join until you're 75. And the reasons why they want old people to be in the army, there seems to be different reasons given throughout the book, you know. For example, that they can use their experience once they join the army, their long life experience. But those, it's really strange because once they get into the army, then they're told, hey, your past experience doesn't mean anything, so forget all of that, and now you're in the army, only do what we say or only think how we say. So that's a bit strange. Another way is that they say, oh, it's the humanity. It's because they've lived so long and they understand humanity and that humans are worth fighting for. They have to worth fighting for. Then I was thinking, wait a second, they're fighting for people who they fought against in a war back on Earth, like the Indians and those kind of guys. They were the people that were now the colonists who they're defending, but now they're fighting for them, you know, and that's a bit of a strange way, as a reason for only signing up 75-year-olds. But the best reason, I think, which is given, is that it's quite a good deal if you're old, because the idea is that you join up for the army, but you don't fight as a 75-year-old old man or old woman. You get given a new, younger body, or you get turned younger, or that's the hint. You know, there's rumours going around, because nobody's really quite sure down on Earth what happens, but they know that you can become young again, and you fight in the war, and then you can keep your body, or you can, you know, you can keep your youth. Of course you can keep your youth once you're finished in the army after 2 or 10 years. And by risking your life fighting for the colonies, you can then get a new life again in your new young body. And that was pretty good, and I quite like the idea. The thing is, it's a good setup and it's a good concept, but it's almost completely forgotten, or it doesn't have any impact on the rest of the story at all, except in one part, or for most of the story, let me put it that way, until we get to part three. Because the book is split up into three parts. Part one, John Perry signs up and he goes into space, and he is made young again in a way that I think it's meant to be somehow surprising the way it happens in the book, so I'm not going to give it away, but he is made young again. Part two, he is trained, and then he begins to fight in wars. Not one war, it says old man's war, but maybe that's some kind of literary kind of title. I'm not entirely sure, but there's lots of wars going on. There's not just one war, because Earth, humans are fighting against all kinds of enemies all the time. You know, all these aliens here, aliens there, aliens on this planet, aliens on that planet, aliens attacking us attacking aliens, all this kind of stuff going on. And so, yeah, lots of different wars, lots of fighting going on. And part three is what happens is that, well, at the end of part two, there is a crisis. And in part three, he then has to deal with it as a new character introduced. And yeah, so it's more about what's happening with the new character. And there is one other war that's sort of tied up, but that's sort of like secondary almost to actually the real crisis, which is sort of like a relationship crisis with John Perry and this new character, which I don't want to give away. So that's what happens in the book. The story... I was going to say, to rate the story, is it any good? To be honest, part three is really good. Like the first chapter, like the first maybe 15 pages is really good. And then the last pages from the end of part two, like for the last little bit of part two onwards, so let's say just from around about page 200 onwards, is good. But you get this big chunk of maybe 170 pages in the middle where, like, the plot isn't going anywhere. They're easy reads, but, you know, it's sort of enjoyable to read, or it's sort of like it's an easy read. It's very well written, this book. You know, it's sort of like you can, it's a very fast read in that way. But nothing is actually happening. Stuff is happening, but the plot isn't moving forward. And for me, this comes back to like this classical thing that a story only begins when the main character has to make a hard decision, or they're forced to make a decision, or they're forced to take a different path from the one that they decided to do. You know, there has to be some kind of crisis that they have to start overcoming in some way. You know, it's a classical kind of, you know, hero story in that way. You know, you have to have something happen to the hero or to the protagonist, and then they have to sort of fight back against it or make a decision or try and do something. That's where stories come into it. The thing is, once you start reading the book, John Perry, he's already decided to join the colony army before the book begins. And we get to know his motivations, but we know that his wife died. This is quite important to the book. She signed up for the army with him, but she died before she reached 75-year-old, and she couldn't join up with him because she's already dead. But apart from that thing that happens before the book, everything goes exactly according to John Perry's plan, except until, like I say, the last few pages of part two. Lots of things happen. Like, you know, there's no denying. There's lots of battles. There's lots of action. He trains up into the army, all that kind of stuff. But there's no events being set in motion. I think that's the key thing. Events have to be set in motion, but they were set in motion before the book starts, and now they're just playing out throughout until, like I say, page 215. And then new events are set into motion, which actually constitutes plot and story. Before that, he's not making any hard decisions at all. On that note, I think it was maybe on the Sofanauts podcast a few weeks ago, I heard someone talk about asteroid mining fiction. They say there's like this whole subgenre of science fiction which is asteroid mining, and they say mining on Earth isn't very interesting, and putting it in space doesn't make it any more interesting. I can't remember who said that quote, but it really resonated with me. Of course, it's like, yeah, of course it's not that interesting. It's just mining. And for me, I realized that's the same thing with military science fiction. You know, this subgenre called military science fiction, which is, you know, all like joining up and fighting in armies against aliens. You know, unless there's something else going on there, like some internal conflict or some wider conflict, you know, it doesn't have to be internal, it could be a wider conflict. Reading about the Space Marines doesn't really interest me at all. Like, for example, like some, I'm just trying to think of other books that are reviewed where there's lots of action going on. Peter F. Hamilton is a good example. There's always, like, wide scope and character issues, and there's fighting along the way, and that fighting is interesting. Whereas this book, as soon as he gets past the training session, at page 140 or something like that, then up until page 200, it's just, they're chatting, they go off to a battle, they chat a bit more, there's another battle, they chat a bit, there's another battle, and then they chat a bit, you know, and you just go through, and I can't even remember what these battles are. They're so inconsequential. There's just nothing. They're just filler there, complete filler. And then there's other people. You read about other people going on into battles, or, you know, fighting against other humans or something like that. And it's just, it doesn't add anything to the point. There's one tiny little bit which adds something to a plot that you find out later on, but, you know, it didn't actually have anything to the personal conflict of John Perry later on. It only had something to do with the wider conflict, but then that wider conflict is so, you know, stupid, you know, because it comes down to this. It's sort of like, there has to be a reason why humans are fighting against all these aliens for me to care about the actual battles, because John Perry never seems to be at risk, even though they're told that all of the Marines, or sorry, all of these you know, these infantrymen who sign up to the infantry women as well, who sign up to the army, they're probably around about 60-70% of them are going to die before their 10 years is up. So you think, wow, this is going to be really dangerous. But time and time again, you're reading like, and they did this battle, and thankfully only one person died, or only two people died, or nobody died. And I'm like, wow, for all of these really, really dangerous stuff going on, you know, he's not seeing a lot of danger. You know, I've been promised one thing, and I'm not getting it at all, which is actually something, a continuing complaint in this. But part one, like I say, isn't so bad. And part three is really, really good, but part two really sort of drags along. Oh, part one, though, I made a note here, pages and pages of explanation of procedure and technology. It's sort of like literally a whole 110 pages of exposition. I actually made that note when I was reading the book. I put down page 110, no story yet, just exposition. And that's what you get. When you get 110 pages into the story, and you actually have to make a note going, when is the story going to start, please? Because all he's doing is going through. And also, I made another note. Like, at one point, John Perry is getting his new, you know, he's becoming a young man again. And it takes 17 pages to talk about his transition from old age to young age again. And I wouldn't mind that 17 pages of that, you know, explanation of what was happening if it had some kind of deep impact on him. And I'd go with it. Unfortunately, there's only two or three lines in the entire 17 pages about what it actually felt like to John and how different he felt or what was going on, you know, mentally. Of course, at the end of it, they all just have sex because they've all got new young bodies again. And they're all like, woohoo, we're young again. We can all have sex. But before that, like, actually, when he's going through the process, there's nothing like that. And they also get this computer in the head called the Brain Pal. Gets installed into their head so they can communicate with it and do all this, you know, what you could do with a computer in your head. But instead of reading about it from John's point of view, like getting it really personal, we just read a user manual. Like it just goes, now we go into a different font, into some kind of Arial font instead of, you know, your Times Roman normal font. And here you go. And we just get like three pages of user manual. And I'm like, there's nothing clearer to be like info dumping than actually just reading the manual. I want something personal. Why can't we find out about it as they use it? In fact, we do find out more about the Brain Pal later on, but it'd been much better if we could have found out about stuff while John Perry, our hero, is actually doing stuff with it and actually moving the plots forward, and then we can learn about the technology as he uses it to do something rather than him just being taught about it. So that's a bit disappointing. Like I say, part three of the book, new character introduced, which actually gives John Perry something to deal with, which doesn't involve just shooting at aliens. Another small point, a bit about the plot, is that there is a bit too much reliance on coincidences. We're actually told there's this 1 in 95,000 chance. And it happens, you know, there's 1 in 195,000 event, but then it's followed by an equally, or if not more, improbable meeting between two characters. And I'm like, wow, this is, you know, it sort of strains my suspension of disbelief, even though it's sort of like alien fighting and sci-fi, you know, you really always already have to, you know, suspend disbelief. But when you actually lay out how unlikely two events are, and then expect us to believe that they happen by chance, or there's no other explanation of how they did happen, you know, it's just a bit strange for that, you know, and I didn't really enjoy it too much, that little part, even though it really did, you know, get the story moving. The coincidence, it did get the story moving again. Now, I've mentioned this before, lots of, you know, guy joins into the army, gets trained in the army, and then goes off to fight against aliens. Sounds a bit similar to other science fiction books. Of course, there is Starship Troopers by Robert A. Heinlein, and this is acknowledged in the acknowledgements at the back of the book. And, you know, there's actually a quote on the front which goes, a lot of SF writers are more or less efficiently continuing the tradition of Robert A. Heinlein. Skulls' astonishingly proficient first novel reads like an original work by the late Grand Master. That's by Publishers Weekly. Oh, Publishers Weekly. I think I've already mentioned before that if the only quote on the front of the book is Publishers Weekly, it means that they couldn't get anyone else to give something, you know, better. I think that happened with John Varley's book as well. Like, all the best quotes were from, like, Publishers Weekly, non-science fiction or, like, specialist, which is a bit strange. Anyway, anyway, yes, you've got that, and of course you've got Forever War, and you've got also other books by Robert A. Heinlein. I'm thinking, is it Space Cadet? Again, goes in, trains, ends up, you know, solving problems, that's less fighting against stuff, you know, it's less militaristic there. But also the Forever War, like I said, I've reviewed that here as well. Similar formula, join army, train in army, fight aliens, etc. The thing is, they have like a certain thing, they have something going for them. Like Starship Troopers, like a young cast, you know, they join the army, I think they have to fight in the army or something to become full citizens, and the Earth seems to be in some kind of peril as well. Same thing with Forever War, but the soldiers, they don't sign up by choice, they're actually forced to sign up, they're chosen from the elite minds of Earth and the elite physical people of Earth in some kind of lottery, and they have to fight. With Old Man's War, the only, like you say, the only original, really original thing about this story is, like I say, the stuff that happens in the third part, I guess, is slightly original. But after, like, the opening section, you know, the actually being an old man and fighting in the war, it's got nothing to do with anything. You know, they pick up old people for the experience, but then they can't use their experience. And what experience does John Perry have? And once he's made young again, he might as well just be a young person. You know, his entire previous life, except for one factor, one big factor. It is a big factor, but it's completely irrelevant for the rest of the novel, which brings me on to the characters. Now, first complaint hold it brought over from the last episode is that superhuman characters, Superman characters, aren't very interesting to me. But you know, I mentioned that in the last episode, so I'll just skip on. Next thing, the big point about the character, the main character is pretty much the vaguest character, vaguest protagonist I've ever read in ever any book ever. Unless the point is that they have to be some vague person. You know, if there's a like mysterious identity going on, then you don't want to give too much away of the backstory. That's fine. In this, the opening chapter, we find out, you know, his wife died, and he's signing up to the army, and his current situation, and we find out that his son is the mayor of the town, and later on in the book we find out a little bit more about his son, and then I was waiting to get to know him better, but nothing, we never got to know him better. For the entire first 120 pages of the novel, we don't get to know anything more about his backstory at all. Even when it could be relevant, or maybe it's not irrelevant. And we get to page 120, and I suddenly wrote down this in my notes. I wrote down, page 120, finally found something out about our hero. And that is a single fact about what he used to do for a living. Now, I was thinking, okay, it sort of built up to this, you know, what he used to, this a fact, you know, in the way, it's actually quite a clever little device of building up to an important fact in the book, and why it's going to become handy later. You know, he's become a soldier, and I'm thinking, okay, how does his previous life and his previous skill or his previous knowledge somehow make him into a better soldier, or will shape him as his life as a soldier later on? And it turns out I was expecting something a lot more interesting and a lot more relevant than what we're actually told. We're just told what he did for a living, and it's probably one of the most boring jobs ever. It does have like a little key, and it does sort of get his foot in the door with the instructor that he's with there, with his sergeant major, you know, drill instructor. But apart from that, no point for the rest of the book at all. But we do actually at the same time find out a little bit more about him. But it's like, you remember the game, the kids' game, the like board, not so much a board game, but it's a guessing game called Guess Who. And it's what I've made a note here. It's what we have in this book as well. It's character portrait by attrition. So we find out what he's not. It's like, is he this? No. So he's not that. And is he this? No. And I made a list here. Of what's mentioned. So we know he wasn't a soldier, we know he wasn't homosexual, we know he wasn't a minority, Christian, Jewish, Muslim, atheist, he wasn't a doctor, a lawyer, a teacher, or blue-collar worker, he didn't own a pet, he didn't own a gun, he wasn't a martial artist, he wasn't a wrestling fan, and he wasn't a clog dancer. Now, all of those things we know that he wasn't. And the way that we find out that he wasn't any of those things is quite interesting, but we never find out what he would be apart from those things. Of course, we know he wasn't a soldier. We do find out his job, and we know he wasn't homosexual because he had a wife, I guess, like that. But then, you know, if he's not Jewish, Muslim, or atheist, or Christian, what was he? You know, that would be really interesting. Like a little, you know, I think if he does have some kind of spirituality going on there, wouldn't that influence him later on in the story? We never find out about it. Okay, we do find out his job. He doesn't own a pet. He doesn't own a gun. He's not interested in martial artists or wrestling. And I'm thinking, okay. Again, there's a little plot kind of thing going on here, but also it's like, what is he interested in? We never find out anything that he's interested in except that he had a wife and that he loved his wife, and that's it. And we find out what he used to do as a job, and that's really boring. And then another pages into the book, I wrote another note, which is that John doesn't like abstract art. And I made another note at the same time. I said, we now know one more thing about him. This list is very short. I could list on 4 fingers the facts that we knew about John, or the relevant facts that we knew about John, but even then irrelevant facts, you know, that would sort of play into his personality. We never find out about that. I don't mind vague characters, but the whole book point of this book is that he's an old man with a full life behind him, and he signed up for a new life. And it's like, okay, before we get to his new life, I want to know more about his past life, and I never know anything about him. It's really, really annoying in that way, really, really frustrating, because I want to care more about him, I want to know more about him. And it's only, like I say, until we get to part 3 where we do find out a little bit more about him that I actually ever care. The rest of the characters are equally vague. They're just like, he picks a name and then he picks a past profession, and that's it. That's all you know, you need to know about them: name, past profession, and if they're male or female or not. But I guess that gets more into the he said, she said, and who you can have sex with. And it, again, I wouldn't really mind that, except they all have exactly the same voice. And that is continuous wisecracking and joking all the time. There's like huge conversations, or like long conversations, and it's like 7 people, 7 retired people, just seeing, like having a competition who can tell the most jokes or make the most one-line funny comments. And again, that would be really great. There's books that are like that. I really enjoy comedy writing. The thing is, I didn't really find much of this funny. A few funny notes there. But again, I was reading this opening section, this where John Perry goes off and he signs up into the army and he's talking to the recruitment officer. And I made a note, right in this first chapter, I said, humour in a character either has to be funny or at least pleasant to read. And then I get to the end of the chapter, and then he actually has to explain to the recruitment officer. He goes, I've actually been telling jokes. I've been trying to make you laugh. Actually, I'm just trying to find the quote here because I thought it's quite relevant. He says, I've been trying to make jokes to you the entire time I've been here. And she goes, oh, not funny. Or maybe, I think there's a comment about her sense of humour being removed or something like that. But it's like, wow, he... Now, after trying to tell jokes, me not laughing as a reader, he then explains to someone he's talking to that he's been trying to be funny, and he's told he hasn't been funny. And I really think that wraps up all of the humour in this book. It's sort of like we're told all the time that these people are funny, or, you can see that they're making jokes, but I'm just not really getting it. Also, lots of 75-year-olds, they act very... like much like 21-year-olds, with this jokey kind of thing. The worst example is that they get their brain pals put into their brains, and they have to give their brain pal a name. This is sort of like a voice in their head. And John Perry calls his brain pal asshole, and someone else calls it bitch. And they all just run through a name of sort of like these really crude, childish names that they're calling the voice in the head. And one of them calls it Satan. And I'm thinking, okay, computer, voice in your head, calling it Satan. And you talk to Satan to get things done. And that makes sense. That's slightly clever, almost clever. But I'm just thinking, come on, try something challenging. 75-year-olds worth of life. And the best that they can come up with is crude names for their brain pals. It's like, come on, you can do better than that. And, final thing is that just a note about this group of seven friends that he makes. And I'm like, why do they exist? And I've worked out the only reason they exist is for exposition, for them to talk about subjects that, John Perry doesn't understand. It's like, hey, how does the skip drive work? Well, here's my theory about the skip drive. Hey, what's this? Ah, I'm a history teacher. Here's how this. And I'm like, oh, okay, get over it. And the other reason is to show how dangerous life is in the army, because you get this group of seven people, and of course, some of them do die throughout the book, kill them off one by one. And again, it seems a bit strange because a lot of things, they seem to die for no reason or from stupidity or just the military action is just stupid that they do. I mean, it's like, why do they use, why is it always infantry going in with guns? Why not bombardment from space? Why not sending in a robot or something like that instead of humans? Why do they always have to use humans with guns, going into trenches and stuff like that, which is just stupid. Anyway, the battles, of the friends, to show how hard it is, John Perry's story, it's his own story, shows actually that fighting in the army isn't actually that difficult if he can do it so well, with no background that we ever hear about, which would prove relevant to show how he is a good soldier anyway. So, general complaint about the book now, maybe I'll come back to this later, but John Scalzi, when he's writing, he often tells something, or he shows something, and then he tells the reader the opposite is true, and then he goes back to showing the actual facts of the matter are as you first thought, and that is, not what he wants you to think. There's this character of the drill sergeant, and I'm starting reading it and thinking, wow, great, this is a good cliche of a drill sergeant, and then John Perry explains, John Scalzi actually explains there, John Perry thinks this drill sergeant is cliche. And I'm like, okay, John Perry thinks the same as I do that this is a cliche character. But then John Scalzi says, actually, no, he's not a cliche. And the character, the drill sergeant himself, says, I'm not a cliche drill sergeant character. And they explain why. And then he continues going on with the story. And he is the most cliched drill sergeant I've ever read about. In all of the films that you see, it's like, you horrible lot, I hate all of you, and you're going to make your life hell, and all that kind of stuff. That's exactly what it is. It doesn't deviate from the cliche even slightly, from this stereotype, from this, archetypal, drill sergeant character. But the thing is, John Scalzi is telling us the opposite. He's saying, oh, no, this isn't. And then there's later on as well, just going to some other cliche characters, get a famous rock star in a previous life who joins up to the army. He's a very cliche character. And then you get the politician in the sort of cliche way, and it's sort of like the getting his comeuppance kind of way that is dealt with, these characters are dealt with. They're sort of introduced as a cliche thing happens to them, and then they move on to the next point. And I'm like, wow, if that was the point of the story, what's going on here? And at one point, I'm thinking, is this satire? You know, is this whole book satire? Because there's, you know, the politics as well that's involved, and the whole idea of infantry, you know, is he trying to show how outdated it is and that Heinlein had it wrong, you know, or all these other kind of things, is that military sci-fi isn't, you know, all it should be cracked up to be and isn't really interesting, and maybe it's a comment on, like, you know, modern military brutality and that kind of stuff. But then I'm thinking, as satire, it's not good enough or not funny enough or interesting enough to be satire. So maybe it is just cliched points and stuff like that. So either Scorsese has to ramp it up to be really satire or, you know, go away again. And ironically, the most, after talking, I made a note here, I missed this note before. The ironic thing is that the most interesting character and important character in the entire novel doesn't have a history. Me talking about these cliched characters without histories, the most important character and the most interesting character doesn't have a history at all. Anyway. Yeah, let's just get quickly back to this complaint again. Explaining things that you've already guessed twice over. To be made young again. I'm thinking, okay, I understand what's going on here. And then, you know, explains it for another 17 pages. I'm like, oh, okay, that's great. And then there's also a test before John Perry is made young again. And I started reading the test, and after about four or five lines, I went, oh, I understand what is going on here. He's trying to, you know, the main character is trying to get a reaction out of him, because they need to sort of, like, see his psychological makeup and how his brain reacts to things like that. And I say, okay, that's understand. But then once he finishes, then it's explained to us in depth detail about what he did it, why he did it, and why the other character was trying to, you know, rile up John Perry. And then we get to read it again. So we get two explanations after I've already worked out what's going on. It's like, seriously, give me a little bit of credit. You know, give any of the readers a bit of credit to understand what's going on. And then there's other times when we're told one thing, like I say, and we go back and find out that the opposite is true. Like, they're told once they're made young again, hey, now you've got this 1 week, and after this week you won't have any time for fun at all. It's just going to be really bad, and it's going to be work from here on in. And then later on, they just sit around and chat. All the characters just sit around and chat for so long. I'm thinking, wow, this... It isn't really. It is a hard life in battle, but between the battles, it seems like they can do whatever they want. You know, go out, hang out, no problem at all. So it's sort of like no time for fun anymore. But actually, they do have a lot of time for fun later on in the book. We're also told that the various aliens are so alien that we can't imagine how dangerous they can be and how alien that they're going to be. And what we're told is that one of John Perry's friends, one of these group of seven friends that he has, he dies, or she dies. I can't even remember. You know, it's so vague, it doesn't actually matter who dies. And he hints at how that person dies. It said, you know, he swallowed something. And I'm like, okay, so he dies of swallowing something or ingesting something. And then what he does, John Scorsese, is he shows us this situation where the cause of death is blatantly obvious. You know, to guess at is so easy, especially actually he's already hinted at how this person dies. And then somebody dies in this way that was obviously going to happen. You know, it's so predictable. And then John Scorsese actually writes, his death, I made a note of this quote, his death showed us we can't imagine the enemy. And I'm like, yes, we can imagine it. I imagined it and I guessed correctly what was going to happen. And you know what prevented this guy from dying? A helmet, wearing a helmet, an enclosed helmet. And there's like this obvious, very simple precaution that you can imagine what the enemy is going to be like because you can imagine it, because it's right there, you can imagine it. I did imagine it, and then you explained it to me in detail, and the soldiers themselves should have been imagining it. It's like, wear a helmet. So the person died, not because he couldn't imagine it, it's just because he was too stupid. He died of lack of imagination, basic human imagination. And then the entire point is worthless because he says that, oh, you know, aliens are so alien that we can't work out how dangerous they're going to be. But then for the rest of the book, he just deals with generic, you know, cartoon monsters with tentacles and claws and a taste for humans, and all you do is shoot them. So it's easy how you deal with them. You shoot them. And it's obviously what they're going to be like. They're going to be like ugly aliens who growl at you and want to eat you, and you just shoot them. So again, it's sort of layers and layers of stuff him telling us, like, one thing, and then we get something else. Anyway, moving on now. Those are, I think, most of the main complaints about the book there. Moving on, action-wise, like I say, quite a lot going on stuff there, and I don't understand why the it's always infantry with guns going into battle. It's sort of like what's this and what's that going on. One thing I did realise is that, like I say, all of the action sequences are actually a bit generic. Like I say, you just go down there. But aside from the genericness of the battles, genericness, is that a word? I don't know. They also blend into each other. But there's also this sort of overlaying brutality. And it's like, no matter what the situation is, the answer is always massive bloodshed. That's it. You just go in there and you kill as many aliens as possible, and doesn't matter what the situation, that is the outcome. Like, they, at one point, they're killing these little aliens, these defensive little aliens, and I just felt sick at the violence, and it was sort of funny in a way. Sort of, I could see how he was trying to pass it off as a comedy thing, but I don't find the slaughter of defenseless beings very entertaining. And then it's sort of like, if they're that defenseless and they're that harmless, walk away from them. Don't just kill every single one of them. And I didn't understand that. And then there's this other story about not just killing aliens. They actually kill humans, and the infantry, they act in such a like brutal way. And I'm thinking, are these the good guys? I'm not entirely sure how much brutality is being condoned by here by, you know, John Scholes' politics. And it's passed off as like, oh, all aliens are brutal, and all aliens, and if humans weren't as brutal as we were, if we weren't equally vicious and equally violent, we'd be wiped out as well. I'm thinking, really? And there's this one character who has like a dissenting view, but he gets, you know, taken out of the equation. And at one point, you know, John Perry, our main character here, he's sort of getting this like twinges in his stomach. He's going, is it really good that we just fight all the time and it's all kill, 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 kill? But then he like 5 pages later, he's moved on from that moral quandary and is just like, kill, 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 kill. Yeah, let's do it. Let's get better weapons and let's go in there and kill the aliens. Kill, kill the aliens. That's all you do. And I actually thought, wow, this is going to be the turning point in the story. Maybe like in, you know, the Forever War, where it's sort of like he just realizes that the entire violence is pointless, you know, and it comes from that, you know, the Forever War is written by someone who fought in Vietnam, in the Vietnam War. And, yeah, so, I mean, he comes back and he writes a book sort of like saying that, you know, violence is pointless. But in this book, it's like, no, violence isn't pointless. Violence is the way to go. There's no other way except violence. That's all they're going to do. Violence, 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 violence. Kill, kill, kill. Shoot, shoot, shoot. And I'm just like, oh, wow, it just got a bit, you know, a bit wearing by the end of the book, no matter sort of like how interesting the individual incidences are. Like, they didn't hang together in a good book. And the message that I got at the end of the book, say, just coming into the themes, is sort of like, war works, violence is the answer, being young again, good for sex, but really, you know, that's about it. What I'd have been more impressed with, actually, is if he wrote about the characters having sex when they were old, when they were 75, instead of when they were made young again. I would have been a lot more impressed with that. But then again, maybe it's a whole satire. Maybe the whole thing is a satire, and it's just gone completely over my head. Which maybe if I read it as a satire, I'd enjoy the book a lot more. Next point... technology stuff. Yeah, skip drive, like vague, you know, sort of like the rules are sort of explained, but never really explained. But again, it gets the characters around the galaxy easily enough. No problem there at all. The brain pal, like the sort of like the computer in the brain, nice idea, and that's quite well developed in the book. I think that's the technology which is the best developed. Then we have the gun, which is sort of like this general gun which can shoot anything. Well, it's not anything. What you do, you have a gun, and you put in this sort of like nano. Block of matter, or the matter, a block of matter made up of nanoparticles. And when you press fire, it creates the bullet and then shoots it. And I'm like, cool, that's pretty cool, you know. And I think so. It can shoot small bullets, it can shoot big bullets, it can shoot, you know, arrows, it can shoot sort of like spray of bullets like a shotgun. I'm thinking, this is good. And then it says it can work as a flamethrower, it can work as a rocket launcher. And I'm like, wait a second. So you got nanoparticles that can make a flamethrower. Do these nanoparticles burn up? Because if they do burn up, how are they shot out of the gun without burning up, and how do you can control it? So it's this weird thing that the gun started off good and then it just gets a little bit silly. It becomes sort of like a pull the trigger and anything can happen kind of gun, which reminds me a bit of the gun in, is it the Ian M. Banks story, which is Against a Dark Background, where you have a gun and you point it at something and you pull the trigger. And you don't know what's going to happen, but you know your target is going to be destroyed. So if you point it at a city and pull the trigger, an asteroid can come down and a meteorite can come down and smash the city. You give it to a person, you pull the trigger, and they have a heart attack. You know, it's that kind of really fun kind of gun. It brought to mind that idea, which is a lot better. But the gun in this book is quite good. Otherwise, not a whole lot of technology going on, and the technology that is sort of explained away until it's not interesting anymore. Which is a bit of a pity. Oh, and also the way that they're made young again sort of undermines later on in the book. You think, okay, if that's what they do to make someone young again, the whole sort of like questions at the end of the book in chapter 3 is a bit strange. It's sort of like, why would the colony administration need permission to do anything, or why would they need to have this whole situation in the first place when they could do this later on? Sort of, it undermines itself there, a bit strange. Finally, writing style stuff. I say generally very well written. John Scalzi, I looked at his Wikipedia page. He's a professional writer. He's a freelance writer. He does know how to write. Like I say, it's a very brisk read. Again, not quite as funny as I think he thinks it is. And I think way too much exposition and explaining. But then again, if this is the first... I know it's the first book in a series of books. So I reckon if the second book is more plot... Email me, put it this way, email me if you've read the second book and tell me if there's more plot or more stuff and more character going on and it's not just exposition. If we can just explore the world and actually have stories going on in the world, tell me and I'll definitely read it. But if it's the same amount of explaining stuff, there we go. But there is quite a good journey that the character goes through. Well, he doesn't go on a journey until, like I say, the last bit, but he goes to different places, and even though a lot of it's a bit generic, you know, there's just stuff going on here. I do like the technology and... you know, and there's lots of possibilities opened up in this book, which I think, again, the possibilities that are there are more interesting than they actually go into. So maybe, like I say, a second book in the series would be good. So overall, I'm going to give this book 3 stars. Again, it sounds like I've been slating it a lot, but there was lots of these big issues, and that's the thing. There's so many big issues that really annoyed me about the book, the vagueness of the characters, the over-explaining, the explaining one thing and then showing us a different thing, like the, and all these different things that I've mentioned here. It makes it sort of go, oh, okay, yeah, I'm getting through it. But it was a fun read in a way, even though the brutality sort of grated at me and I wasn't quite sure about the politics behind it, and I'm just thinking, I'm not really sure. It's nowhere as near as good as Starship Troopers, nowhere as good as Forever War. So, and also this quote on the front, you know, saying how it follows the path of Robert Heinlein. Not really. It's sort of like I say, he tells the same story, or tells a story very heavily influenced by Robert A. Heinlein's books, like his juvenile novels. But really, you need to get the plot going a lot sooner, and actually get the action, like the relevant action, going a lot sooner. And also have more interesting bad guys, enemies here as well. I actually thought that the colony was going to be the bad guy in the end, but actually, no, it turns out the generic aliens are the main bad guys, and I'm like, okay. Anyway, so maybe that's a spoiler. Don't know. So, yeah, 3 stars. So, again, email me if the next one in the series is good. And also, sorry if I've sort of panned this book, but if you've got a defense of any of these things as well, email me, luke@juggler.net, and I'll maybe discuss those emails at the beginning of the next podcast. Now... next book that I'm going to read, I picked up this one because I had this one. I've read a book by John Varley and I hated it. And everyone said, "Oh, don't worry about Red Thunder. Check out Steel Beach by John Varley. It's much, much better." And there was another book, I can't remember what it was, sort of Iron Globe or something, Iron something. But Steel Beach, they said, that's good, so read that. And I picked it up here because I brought it along with me on holiday, but I read on the back this quote, "One of the few novels that deserves to be compared to the works of Robert Heinlein." And I'm like, actually, I've just read a book which is meant to be compared to the works of Robert Heinlein. So I'll take a bit of a break from that, from, you know, it says it's about... alien invasions and stuff. It's like, yeah, okay, forget about aliens. So I thought, okay, forgetting about aliens, let's go with Kim Stanley Robinson, who doesn't generally write about aliens. So this is the Gold Coast, and this is, I think it's a series of books which is they're all set in different futures, but all on the same part of the coast of San Francisco. And I read one and really enjoyed it. So I think this is, like, again, it's set in a different future, a prophetic glimpse into America's near future, it says on the front. So I do enjoy Kim Stanley Robinson's writing, just because of the down-to-earthness of it a lot, and the sort of hard science fiction. Well, not sort of hard science fiction, but yeah, there's lots of good stuff. Anyway, I'll explain it next episode. Don't need to go on about that now. So that's about it for this episode. So you can check out my travels and stuff on Twitter, @LukeBurge on Twitter, or more in-depth kind of stuff going on, and all my other projects, my music, videos, and other writing stuff, it all goes there on my blog, which is lukeburge.com/blog. You can read my first novel that I put out a while ago, a few weeks ago, at lukeburge.com. There's a link right there at the front page. And also, if you want to check out my second novel, be a first reader, see if you can be the first person to read my second novel, which does actually include alien monsters and different planets and shooting and guns and stuff, which is a big departure from my first novel. But it's not only about that. There's a lot more going on. Anyway, but yeah, if you want to check that out, email me, luke@juggler.net. Otherwise, that's it for this episode. I'm sitting here in the van with the doors closed because the waves outside here on the beach that we're parked about are very loud. And now the sun's come out and I'm absolutely boiling. Not had a lot of sun recently here on this holiday. But now absolutely boiling, sweating like anything. So I need to turn this off, open the doors and get some air. Anyway, catch you next time.